There were also earth gods. Now, not surprisingly, earth was understood as feminine. And therefore, those divine beings, specially charged with earth and its fertility and its richness and its abundance, were conceived of as female amongst the various peoples of Sumer and other places as well. Now, in between these male sky gods and female earth gods, there was a whole host of other beings imagined more or less clearly at different times and different places among different people. What we see here is a process that we can characterize as animism. Now, animism means quite simply that you really don't see anything in the world as lifeless, that everything somehow is alive. From wind and rain and storms to animals, even to abstract forces, love, hate, fear, all of these things can somehow be imagined as divine and as greater than and external to ourselves. Now, these gods and goddesses differed from humans in a couple of very basic respects. They were immortal, and they were superhuman. In other respects, when we meet them, we know a lot more, for example, about Greek and Roman gods. We'll have more to say about them in later lectures. But they appear much the same. They seem like us, except that they are immortal, and they have superhuman powers. The religious rites practiced by the Sumerians were fundamentally aimed at propitiating these gods, at trying to keep them in order. The religion was fatalistic. The religion was pessimistic. Now, these were people who could be conquered at any time. These were people who could be flooded and destroyed at almost any time. The Nile floods absolutely annually and predictably and benevolently in Egypt. That is not true of the Tigris and Euphrates. And consequently, it's not surprising that people felt a bit pessimistic and a bit fatalistic about their religion. All they could do was try to keep these gods in order. And I think that that may have been related, in certain ways, to the geography, to the climate, and sort of to the political life of the area. It's interesting, too, that these gods and goddesses served no ethical functions in these societies. As near as we can tell, how you lived your life made absolutely no difference. Good people didn't get a reward, bad people didn't get punished. You didn't turn to religion for explanations of how to live well, how to live honorably, how to live justly. These are ideas that we will see emerge slowly and very much later. We can say also of these various religions that they represent something else for us and something quite different from what you might think. If we try to understand the natural order today, we would turn to the various natural sciences for the various rules of how the world works. What we see with the Sumerians was a first attempt, and I think in many respects actually an impressive one, to begin understanding the forces of nature, to systematize them, to give them names, to differentiate among them. The answers that they gave may strike us as primitive, may strike us as utterly incredible, but what is interesting is the beginning of the process of bringing some order into how we think about that world out there. That, I think, is actually a fairly impressive achievement. Law is another important achievement of the Mesopotamian peoples, and in particular, in the first place, of the Sumerians. The laws appear to have been issued, first of all, by councils of notables in conjunctions with priests and kings. Priests early, kings later. These laws are interesting in a number of ways, distinctive in a number of ways. They are not abstract. They are not philosophical. No Mesopotamian law code comes with a great preamble like the American Constitution. There's nothing like our Declaration of Independence. There's no statement of first principles, no liberté, égalité, fraternité, nothing like that. They are long lists of rules. Do this, do this, do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, with oftentimes specific fines attached to the rules. If you do this, it's going to cost you this. And very often the laws are very cruel. You can be sentenced to death for an enormous number of offenses. It is in these laws that we think we can see a lot of the social struggles of these societies, that people were somehow making rules to keep the powerful from destroying the powerless, to keep the rich from overrunning the poor. It's in these law codes that we think we get some feel for the social stresses of these societies. Unfortunately, we have too little evidence really to hang very much flesh and sinew on that skeleton, but that appears to be what we're looking at. Now, the law is interesting to us in a second way.